scores! Gilmore scores! The final three left!
Off the glass, it looks corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all. Aguilla's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, let's get it going as we are underway on this Friday, February 7th. It's Flames Talk from our Groundworks downtown studio on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. And we get things going on the Sports Drive tonight. Brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockandSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Hopefully your week has gone well. Hopefully you're looking forward to the weekend and the Four Nations break for the Flames and the rest of the NHL. Because it's Friday, it's time for the Eric Francis Hour. EF joins us every Friday for an hour here on Flames Talk. Eric Francis Hour gets going right now. Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca with us for the next hour. Hello, my friend. How are you?
I'm well, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing all right, my friend. I'm hanging in. I'm really curious as to kind of how you're feeling about everything with this team with one more game to go before the break. And you wrote about this after the 4-2 loss to Colorado on Thursday night, kind of the idea of how the Flames have looked in their last few games going up against some real high-end opposition. I guess tell us a little bit about where your head's at and what you wrote about on Thursday following that home ice loss.
Well, I think when you look at the standings going into that game on Thursday night, Colorado was only 5 points ahead of the Flames. And, I think that would almost lead people to believe that, they're pretty close in terms of, well, at least where they are. But when you watch that game, you can tell they're oceans apart. Like, I think what we've seen over the last week, and this isn't really meant to be a criticism, it's more just a reality check, is that, they were thoroughly outclassed by the Leafs and Colorado the last two games. And then going back another week before that, they were beaten rather soundly by Washington and Winnipeg. And while they may have kept the scores relatively close, I don't think in any of those games did it ever feel like past, midway point of the game that the Flames could either come back or kind of hang with them because of their lack of goal scoring mostly. So it really just kind of those four games in particular over the last couple of weeks have kind of illustrated the difference between a team that is just trying to barely get into the playoffs and a team that's trying to make waves in the playoffs and challenge for a Stanley Cup. And that, again, it's amazing that the Calgary Flames are in the position they're at, that they're this close to a playoff spot. But there's a chasm between them and the next tier or two in the NHL that I think is pretty significant. And it's still going to take, obviously, several years for them to kind of bridge that gap, if you ask me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
Is that unfair? Like, I don't think it's a small sample size, but it's a pretty significant one to me.
It is fair, and I think because the first thing you want to say is, yeah, well, they're playing without Kevin Ball right now, and they're playing without Connor Zary right now, but, I mean, they got beat by an Avalanche team that didn't have Josh Manson and Valerie Nichushkin, and so that was a shorthanded Avalanche team, and they got beat by Toronto without their leading scorer. Mitch Marner wasn't in there. So, like, every team is dealing with injuries at this stretch. Everybody just wants to get to this Four Nations break to rest and recover. And so, yeah, I think it is fair because part of the reason why the Flames are struggling as much without Ball is because they were a team that, was their blue line had played very, very well and had been a nice sum of the parts, but was an injury away from really kind of being patchwork together and struggling, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I love what you said. Like, everybody's hurt right now. But when you're a team that doesn't have the kind of the high end talent like the Flames, your injuries, especially when they're the significant players, are going to sting even more. So that's not really a thing, because that's apples to apples. Everybody's missing somebody. But it's just, I think everybody had kind of hoped and wondered, is this a litmus test for this team? With these four games, or at least the last two in the last week. And I think it was, and the results weren't good. Like, it's just a reminder. It's going to be a hell of a struggle for this team to get into the playoffs if they can do so when they're going head-to-head against Vancouver.
So is this group coming back down to earth? Would that be a way to put it? Yeah, I'm curious as to kind of the big picture view that you have of it. Like, and I ask that because, I don't know, you and I or me and Wes or me and Vix on this show have probably talked a few different times this year about, hey, are the Flames coming back down to earth? And is this maybe, okay, now we're starting to see what they really are? And then every time they find a way to come back, and every time they find a way to work their way back into the conversation and build themselves back up. So I'm curious as to where you are on just what they are, knowing that they have not fallen completely out of this thing at any point yet.
Yeah, no, I don't think it would be fair to write them off and say that they're finally going to fall off. But I will say two things about that. You know, in the calendar year of 2025, I believe they now have a losing record. I think you were the one who pointed that out.
They're 8-9 since the calendar flipped.
Yeah. So, Wolf has come down to earth a little bit of late. We have to admit that. There's no question about that. And he's the number one reason why they're in the playoff race. I'm not blaming him. I mean, there have been some egregious breakdowns defensively that led to a lot of goals over the last week. You know, of the 9 goals that went in, a good chunk of them were odd man rushes where, you know, a goalie's got a tough task there. But it's not just that they're coming back down to earth. It's also that this is the time of year where everybody steps it up another level. It's, you know, I'm not saying everyone was mailing it in the first half of the year. I'm not suggesting that. But teams are either jockeying for first or second place, home ice advantage, and even the crappy teams are vying for jobs. All those guys are trying to prove that they belong in an organization that's looking at everything for next year. So I think that everything's stepped up a level, and the Calgary Flames haven't quite been able to answer that. Now, I fully expect them to play really well tomorrow against Seattle, and I actually expect them to win. But that becomes a bit of a dangerous game there, too, because if they don't win tomorrow, they go into the break with an awful sour taste in their mouths moving forward, not just, you know, losing to teams that they were probably supposed to lose to, but then losing the free spots on the bingo card like Seattle at home on a Saturday night.
Yeah, and no doubt that game becomes a whole lot more important on Saturday. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of with you. Like, I'm not ready to write this group completely off, because any time that people have written them off before, they found their way back. But I do think it's fair. Like, it's probably safe to say, EF, that it's going to get that much more difficult, and it's going to get that much, like, the pace is going to ramp up that much more when we get into the post break. Like, that post break schedule in the week or so leading into the trade deadline, and then obviously after the deadline, like, once things are back on February, whenever they're back, I think it's February 23rd is when they're back. When the puck drops on the post break schedule, I think things will have advanced another step, and it'll be interesting to see how the Flames keep up with that.
Now, I think they have 7 games left out of their, how many games have they got? 25, 26, I don't know, whatever the number is. You know, they've got 7 left still against bottom feeders like San Jose, Anaheim, and Seattle. You know, but so does almost everybody else. But they've done well to dispose of those bottom feeders this year, unlike past years where they've played down to their opponents. They've really done a good job, I think, this year, for the most part, of taking care of business when it's easier to take care of. It's funny, I heard you with one of the callers on my way home last night, and he was suggesting that by the time they get back from that road trip after the trade deadline, like,
yes, Jose.
He was saying, you know, they'll be out of the playoff race so far that it'll be easy to make trades, knowing, you know, for Craig Conroy. And I'm like, like that mathematically, that's not even a possibility because they don't even play that many games between now and the trade deadline, given the 2 week break. They're going to be in it right up until the trade deadline, whether they're four or five back or they're right there. And I do think that the general manager has a plan in place that I would hope and I would think will not change one iota from now until March 7th. Would you agree with that? Like, I just can't see many scenarios other than potentially one of their best players getting a big injury with the GM changing his tack and thinking a little more short term than he's always promised he would be.
Yeah, I go back to, Craig Conroy came in on last Thursday night following the big trade with Philly, sat down on our post game show and said, what I thought was really, really telling was that, he was talking about how, people are wondering, hey, we're fighting for a playoff spot. Are we going to go out and try to start getting rental players? He said, no, we're going to try to stick to our plan. And then he stopped himself and he said, no, we're not going to try to stick to our plan. We're going to stick to our plan and we're not going to do that. And I thought it was really telling that he even caught himself and said, no, we're not going to try. Like, we're sticking to the plan and we're not going to be altering course. So, yeah, I think that the whole idea of, and whether people on the outside agree or disagree with what his plan is, I think he's got a plan. I think it's a 3 to 5 year thing. I don't think he's going to alter the course between now and the trade deadline, whether his team is 3 points in or 5 points out of a playoff spot. I think the whole idea of any deal he's going to make, if it makes the team better now, that's great. But the important thing is it makes them better long term.
Well, and I love, I have heard you say, and I don't disagree, that, potentially they could be in the market for going out and getting a left-handed defenseman if it fits into the parameters, someone they can grow with, someone they'll have control of their contract with, and someone who they see moving forward, not just a band-aid approach or a rental. But I also think that this organization has been served so well. And the reason why there's so much optimism that at least they're moving in the right direction in this city is that they keep calling kids up from the AHL and they keep finding, not every time, it's never going to happen every time or for any organization, but they keep finding guys that they're like, wow, I'm not sure we knew that this guy could be this good this quick. So Soloviov comes up now, and I really hope, and I'm sure that he's going to get in Saturday night, and I really hope they give him a good long look as opposed to going out and trying to trade for someone. I still think it's a major deficiency for this team. They can't find that second-pairing guy to play with Weegar, and they've tried everybody, and I feel like I think they should try someone from the farm or two to see if there's a fit there as opposed to going out and making a trade. Because at this point in time, I love the two moves they made, the two ads they made. And I don't feel like this is a team, especially from what I just saw this week, not sure it's a team worth investing any more assets short term at all. Just to try and get into this playoff race.
Yeah. Like if they could go find a young defenseman, And Vickers and I talked about this on Thursday's Flames Talk. We talked about a few different guys who I think could be attainable around the league that would absolutely help them with their, kind of solidifying their blue line, absolutely get them a whole lot closer to finding a permanent partner for Mackenzie Weegar, all that type of stuff. And I think there are some names out there. I think there's some really interesting names out there, and they wouldn't be cheap, but they'd be the type of moves that would still be in line with Conroy's plan. Like, one of the guys that we identified is 21. One's 24. The oldest one was 26. So I think that there are deals like that that could happen between now and March 7th, and I'd be all for them happening before the trade deadline. But if they don't happen before the trade deadline, that's okay. And they can still address those things into the offseason.
Yeah. And I don't know how many of those young guys actually do become available and are shopped around. I know Carson Soucy's a name, but I wouldn't put him in that category.
He's over 30.
Yeah, exactly. You got a little control, though, for one more year. But, yeah, it doesn't fit into anybody's narrative that this Calgary Flames team should be talking about. So that one's kind of baffled me that so many people are talking about that. But I get it because he's available. I think this is the team that got you here for the most part. They filled a hole that they were looking to fill for the last year. They added what I would consider to be a bonus player in Farabee, if that works out for them. And now it's just, okay, these are the guys. We'll still kick tires at the trade deadline, but no promises, and I really don't think anyone should force anything. Let's see if this team is good enough. And in that vein, let's see Solovyov. Let's see him play on the second pairing. Maybe it's third pairing to start off, but let's see how he can acclimate into the NHL for his second year. You know, you never know. Maybe he is ready. You know, stranger things have happened with guys that nobody saw coming from the AHL before.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think that is really important as part of what Conroy's trying to do. Like, he's been trying to get younger the whole time, and I think he would far prioritize giving Solovyov, and if it's not Solovyov that works, another guy like a Kuznetsov in the American League, I think he would prioritize going that way than going out and bringing in a 30-plus-year-old like Carson Soucy or somebody of that same vein. I do think he's going to prioritize that, and especially, like, I don't think a guy like Soucy is going to necessarily come cheap. So I think that the easy answer for Conroy is, okay, well, we've got some depth in the American League and we want to get younger and we're trying to see who works with this group long term. And I think he would lean that way. It's honestly, Francis, I think it's a big reason why Dryden Hunt has only been recalled now, because Dryden Hunt's a 29-year-old who they know exactly what he's all about. They know what Dryden Hunt is capable of. They know that if he steps into the lineup, they know exactly what they're going to get, and they can trust him. And they also know that he's a great pro on the American League team. And what they didn't know is what Jacob Pelche could be. They still had some questions about Walker Dewar. They wanted to see what Rory Karens could be. Hell, they wanted to even see what an older Clark Bishop could do on an NHL roster before they went and brought Dryden Hunt up. And I think that all of these things just fit in line with the way Craig Conroy has messaged right from the get-go. And I think that his actions have all along been pretty in line with his words.
That's right. Don't forget Justin Kirkland, right? I mean, That was a huge one this year that, again, nobody saw coming. And you and I were talking to Conroy the other day, and he was like, somebody asked, you know, was there ever a chance that Kirkland was going to get sent down? And he said, no, like from the minute he came up here, we knew he was on our roster the rest of the year. And I'd be shocked if he's not on the roster again next year.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just given how well he fit in and the role he played. And to your point, they know exactly what he is. And so as they start to plan and plot, you know, who fits where moving forward next year, they know where they can slot him and all the different options that he brings when he's in the lineup. So it's time they start doing that more with defensemen. You know, they have had, what, basically 8 guys to rotate all year long around here. And it just, we're seeing over just the last 2 or 3 weeks, it's not working. There's just too much of a hole back there at times. And so now they have to try and figure out if that can be solved immediately with someone on the farm. And if not, I guess you're just going to have to keep rotating the guys you have right now and hope that one or two of them step up.
Mm-hmm. How much are they missing Kevin Ball right now in your eyes?
Well, it's big, right? Because it's one less pairing you ever have to worry about. I'm not sure they worry about Rasmus Anderson and whoever they've put him with. You know, actually, I think Hanley stepped in nicely and done a good job there. But it doesn't give you the dynamic duo that they've had from the start of the season with those two guys. It's just an okay pair without Ball. So, you know, I have full expectation Ball will be back when the break's over. Knock on wood for the team, but it has been a big hole, and it's really just served to show more than anything else the hole that they've got, you know, alongside Mackenzie Weegar. They just can't seem to figure that one out. The third pairing one to me is not even much of a concern, because you always have Bahal, and as long as you have someone else who you can play defensively dependably, you're fine. But it's that second pairing guy, and Miramanov is just really not been what they'd hoped he'd be yet. And Jake Bean's taken some turns in there, and it hasn't been quite what they want. Look, I do think that we should talk about, you know, I don't know if you want to get into it now or later, but, you know, it's a, such a very interesting discussion to look at, you know, what could Oliver of Shillington been had they signed him? And I don't know if you want to get into that now or later, but, you know, that was really brought to mind to me last night. You know, if they had been able to sign him, if he had not made a miscalculation on the free agent market and gone elsewhere, would he have been the solution? And we wouldn't even be having this discussion at this point in time. Or is he a guy who was probably never destined to return to the form that he showed a couple of years ago before he took his 18-month break? I don't know. But that came to mind last night. Did it strike you that last night? Not watching him play. He only played 13 minutes. He wasn't very good.
It definitely crossed my mind for sure. You're like, yeah, you know, they definitely could use him. Although it did kind of feel like how much better would he have been than what Jake Bean has been this year?
We don't know. And we'll never know. And I like the signing of Bean to replace Shillington when it happened. I'm like, okay, well, it's a, you know, there's some risk involved in bringing back Oliver Shillington that, you know, we don't need to get into. But, you know, Jake Bean has been around. He's paid his dues. He's, you know, been, you know, I thought it was a good signing. I thought it was a good gamble, the right age, the right price. You would have to tell me what you think in terms of, like, how happy have they been with Jake Bean so far this year? And again, he's still a relatively young player, and there's still room to grow there. But, he, you know, I think ideally he would have been the number three guy, number four guy all year long. Am I wrong? Isn't that what they were hoping?
I think ideally, yes. I guess for me, it's more just, The way things went with Shillington was so strange, and I don't know. Like, I do think there was a miscalculation on the players' side of things, but I'm not sure if there was a miscalculation. Like, do you think that the Flames miscalculated anything there on the Shillington front?
Not necessarily. No, because there's so much risk involved. I think it was incumbent on the player to come down and accept the Flames' terms. You know, I think there was some goodwill there that should have been recognized a little more potentially. The Flames, you know, the Flames certainly were great to Oliver Shillington, and I think gave him tremendous support. I think it was a good environment for him to stay in because it was familiar. Or maybe he needed to go somewhere else, whatever. And then there's always the agent who's saying, look, the last time you played in the NHL for a full year, you were a top four defenseman. We're going to go and get you paid like a top four defenseman somewhere. And the Calgary Flames weren't willing to do that. And I don't blame them. So I don't blame the Calgary Flames. I think the blame is on Shillington for the most part. But again, he has to make his own decisions. There was a lot that happened, as he was saying to me the other day, that he didn't want to get into.
Yep.
But, you know, of course, we've all heard different things about, you know, he thought he was going to sign on with one team. They ended up acquiring someone at the draft, and
I do believe that's what happened, and it's bad luck. But I do believe that that's what happened, and unfortunately, those things do happen. And I don't think the Flames, honestly, Francis, on the Shillington front, I don't think they did anything wrong. They had an offer on the table for him that wasn't multi-year, and I know that they were maybe hoping for something multi-year, but the Flames had an offer on the table. I believe there were some performance bonuses and incentives involved in it, and they were comfortable with what they put on the table for him. And he thought, and again, like, all the power to him. If they thought there was a two or longer year deal out there in free agency, I would have gone and chased that too. And then it fell through, and the Flames were like, okay, well, we've already gone and gotten Jake Bean, so here's where our offer is now, and we'd love to have you back. And they thought that they could get more elsewhere, and so he's in Colorado now. And I don't think that you should begrudge the player. I definitely don't think the Flames did anything wrong, and here we are. He's a member of the Colorado Avalanche now.
And again, all of this, we're speaking in very vague terms, and there's all sorts of rumors, and we all have our thoughts on where he could have gone and should have gone. But pretty safe to say that he would have made a whole lot more money as a Calgary Flame than $1.05 million that Colorado's playing.
Yes, I do believe that the offer, especially the initial offer that was on the table before they decided to go elsewhere, I believe was larger and had some pretty good performance bonuses involved in it too.
Yeah, no, exactly. So I think by so many different metrics, it was, you know, it was a miscalculation on his part. Oh, whatever, life's full of risks and you take them, and it could have easily paid off for him had that other team not acquired another player in his stead. At the end of the day, I'm not sitting here suggesting that Oliver Shillington would have been the answer to the problem that they have right now. All I'm saying is it was just interesting that last night with his return, it made me think, geez, things could be a little bit different, good or bad, had it gone the way everyone was expecting it to go. Look, the player, the organization, I think everyone was a little surprised at the end when it didn't happen. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there were times last season where I thought it was like there were a couple of times like in season after he had made his return where I had heard like from people in out of the organization, like, oh, watch out, this thing's pretty close to. So I honestly thought it was as close to fait accompli as you're going to get. And so, yeah, I mean, when it turned out that it's like, yeah, doesn't sound like Shillington's going to be coming back to the Flames, it was a big time surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, I thought from the start it was unfortunate for the player more than anything else. But anyway, they move past it. He moves past it. He hasn't been happy with the way it's gone there so far this year. Obviously, he was in and out of the lineup before his injury. Now he's back. I'm not sure how long he'll be in the lineup because Manson probably won't be out past this break. And then who knows what will happen. But he's just hoping that he has a good finish to the season. And then obviously gets a chance somewhere else, somewhere next year. Or maybe in Colorado, but I doubt it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We got lots still to talk about on the Eric Francis Hour. Eric Francis, Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca with us, as he is every Friday. And a lot still to dive into as the Flames have one more game before the Four Nations break. And Flames Talk and the Eric Francis Hour is coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio on this Friday. Groundworks, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Eric Francis Hour continues with Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. My name is Pat Steinberg on this Friday. Okay, here's my million-dollar question, EF. Flames need a win to go into the break on Saturday against Seattle. Who do you start in net? Is it Dustin Wolf, or do you go back to Dan Vladar?
Oh, it is a really good debate, and normally it wouldn't be, because I know everybody's answer every single time, unless it's back-to-backs. But, you know, I'm going to go with Wolf, because I'm going to defer every time. And when you need a win, you're still going to go to your MVP. And I don't think he's tired. And so I don't think you have to protect against that. They've got 2 weeks off after this. Like I would say go back with Dustin Wolf. And it's not necessarily a slight on Vladar because he played well last game. And I think for the most part, he's played quite well this year, but he's not the team MVP. And you really need a win going into this break, if you ask me. I start Wolf. How about you?
Yeah. There's plenty of reason to think about going Vladar. He's 6-1-1 career against Seattle. He played well against the Kraken just under a week ago. There are some cracks in Dustin's armor here that I don't think they're debilitating or anything like that. But you know, there have been a few goals that have been scored. They've been high danger chances. They've been quality opportunities that have derived from breakdowns from the Flames in front of them. But, you know, some of these stops he has been making in the past. So I think there's at the very least a small question as to whether or not the workload is starting to weigh on him a little bit more. So I think there are plenty of reasons to think about going to Dan Vladar. But in the end, you need this win.
In the end, you need to go into the break with a winning feeling. In the end, you don't want to fall potentially four out of a playoff spot. You need this win. And if you need a win, I'm going with my meal ticket. And the Flames are where they are, led by Dustin Wolf. And so for me, yeah, as much as I think that there are very fair arguments to starting Dan Vladar, there's a two-week break coming up. Dustin's going to have all kinds of time to rest and recover and get ready for the stretch drive. And for me, I'm very, like, I'm pretty steadfast that I'm going to Wolf again, and there's not really any question about it.
Yeah, me too. But would I be up in arms if they went with Vladar? And, you know, and then the coach would explain after the game, win or lose, yeah, Vladar's got this great record against Seattle. He just beat them just recently. You know, we wanted to get him a little more reps. I can see merit to all of it. I'm with you. But I sometimes think a lot of that's overthinking it. You go with your best player.
What do you think they'll go Wolf?
You know, it's funny. Under the previous coach, I never would have guessed who was going to start in that, because you could never tell. You could never tell. And probably earlier this season, I'm not sure we could ever tell. We weren't convinced it was going to be a 50-50 split. But now that he's getting, you know, the lion's share of starts, I feel pretty confident saying that I think that they're going to start. I don't know. I don't know. All I'll say is I think they should do what I think is the right thing, and that's start Wolf. But no, it wouldn't surprise me if they started Vladar. So they're both good questions. It's a good debate. I'd be interested to see what the text line thinks in terms of a percentage on each guy.
Yeah.
But you know, we'll have to see tomorrow about 10:05 or whenever the starter comes out onto the ice and Patty Steinberg tweets it out.
He never does that. That guy's an idiot.
Well, I remember I said to you the other day, I said, like, are you still tweeting out the goalie, starting goalie every morning? Like, I didn't think that was news anymore. Like, it's going to be Wolf 9 times out of 10, unless there's a back-to-back, you know, or an injury. But, you know, I don't want to shoot the messenger. You do your job, and everybody knows that you're the guy to go to find out the starting goalie every morning.
Well, as long as I've got one task in life that I can do passively well, then I'm happy with that. Hey, we're 8 days in as we're talking right now, 8 days into the Farabee and Frost additions being members of the Flames. They've played 4 games. They've won 1 and lost 3. Farabee's got a goal. Frost has got a goal. Where are we on the new additions, how they're fitting in? How are we feeling? By no means am I saying, oh, have they won or lost the trade? Of course not.
Yeah.
But how are we feeling about it, and what have we seen in a very short and small workload and body of work so far?
Well, one thing before I answer that I want to say is, and I said this on the broadcast last night, I think it bears repeating. You know, the Calgary Flames have done such a good job at trying to continue to build a reputation as a place that players should want to come and play.
Yes.
You know, that reputation that they've had over the last couple of years where it's not somewhere where people want to stay, and obviously a lot of veterans left. You know, I think that really did some damage to the brand. And I think they've worked really hard at trying to turn that around. The new building will help. I think the new management team will help. It's a first-class management team. I'm not saying it wasn't before, but, you know, the fact that they went and picked those two guys up at a private jet the other night, I don't know if that's gotten enough press. I think it's not just symbolic. I think it's important to the players. I think it's important to everyone else who saw it happen. And if you didn't think it was important and you don't think it's a big deal, consider the fact that the team that just acquired Jacob Pelche and Kuzmenko received the players last night, exactly 1 week after the trade was made.
Yeah.
And not in time for the game. They showed up. And they were standing in the press box. Like, I don't know. Hey, as I said on the air last night, I know Trump's trying to deal with the border, shut it down a little bit, but you can't tell me that in today's modern day NHL that you couldn't have expedited that thing a whole lot faster than a week. I think that says a lot about the two organizations and the where they are in terms of class, where they are in terms of being a place that you want to go and play.
Yeah.
So I just want to point that out, because I think that – that wasn't
by mistake that they got picked up in a PJ. That costs a lot of money. And I think it's done with an eye on trying to show everybody, hey, we do things first class around here. And I think it works. Look, don't you think it's embarrassing? Like, I know Philadelphia's out of the playoff race pretty much, and they clearly don't care. And maybe they don't even care about those two players. Maybe they see them as spare parts and all they wanted was a second rounder. But I just think that that's pretty poor optics, don't you? That you wait.
Yeah.
Like, when was the last time a player in the NHL had to wait a week to get across the border to join a team? Like, that's embarrassing to me.
Well, in fair, the only thing I'll say on that is it did take a little while for, remember Tanev had to wait a little while to get in with the Stars last year for similar reasons. But that doesn't change the fact.
It's harder to go that way. I get it.
But it doesn't change the fact that I'm with you completely that it's bad optics. It doesn't look good at all when, as you said, the Flames brought in a they brought in Air Francis. It was your private jet, right? They just borrowed yours?
No comment.
So they took the private jet and they got those guys in ASAP, allowed them to get a morning skate in, all that type of stuff. I think that cannot be. I'm completely with you. I don't think you can overstate that. And I, you know, even Elliot Friedman mentioned it on in 32 Thoughts about how much that resonated around the league and with other players in this league. And I think that's maybe the most important thing, EF, is that other players took note of it. And that, I think, is a big, I think that's a big feather in the cap based on what you're talking about in trying to sway the rest of the league back to being in Calgary is a place you want to be. And I think it did. I think it made a big difference. I think that is a very, very fair point.
Yeah. You can't change the weather. You can't change the fact that we're kind of in the middle of nowhere. You can't change some of the obstacles that this organization's had to deal with for a long time. But what you can impact, they've tried to address. They've got a new building coming. They've got PJs going to pick up players. Like, I just, you asked how the players have played. I think Morgan Frost has been as advertised. I think he's looked very good. I think he's got some good hands. The promise that he's really good at zone entries has been fulfilled. I see that. I think he's very good at that. I was a little surprised that he was getting immediately put on the first power play unit over Farabee. But I get why, and they explain why. And I think it makes perfect sense. I think he's looked really good. And I think he's being put in a position, like I would say, everybody in the organization right now slots in. I'm not talking about the defense, but I'm talking about the forwards. Nobody is being slotted into a position where they're uncomfortable, you know, and I think that's, they've come a long way in that regard. He's got every opportunity to be a very impactful third line center. Like, you know, they're not asking a whole lot from him. But what they are asking him to do, face-offs, you know, a little power play time, generate some offense on the third line. Yep. I think that he's going to be more than capable of doing it.
Yep.
And you'd agree?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. And I think he's still, I also think there's still a bit of a learning curve there. I think that once, I think once for him, some of the stuff they do that was different in Philadelphia becomes a little bit more natural. I think once that is kind of behind him, I think we'll see less of the mistakes that I think are happening just because of the fact that it's a new place and there's some new things that he's getting used to, new line mates, new systems, all that type of stuff. So I'm with you on Frost. I think generally it's been a pretty good start to his Flames career.
Yeah, and Farabee, I don't think he's had as good a first impression, but I do like the fact that they're starting to feel comfortable that they can play him killing penalties, because that's important, and, you know, filling in the spot that Peltier was playing there. And I think that, you know, the upside in terms of what we've seen he's done in the past, 20 goals a couple times, 50 points last year, you know, I'm not really concerned that he won't eventually start to pick it up and be an impact player. They put him on a pretty nice perch on that top line, which was smart, I think, to just give him every opportunity to be successful, play with the guys who have the two best chemistry in the league in Kadri and Huberto. I think the third period last night in a game that was kind of a blowout at that point in time, they had demoted him, and I don't know if that was an injury. I don't know if it was just sending a message or if it was just to try and shake it up. But they had Pospisil back on that top line in the third period, I noticed. So, you know, a blip on the radar. I don't know. It hasn't been as impactful, but I do still think that, there's a lot of room to grow. And I think he'll be a very serviceable guy, whether he ends up on the first line or, right. or the third line.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Frank.
I wouldn't mind seeing him and Frost play together, too, because they're besties. And they played together a whole lot over the years. So that would be another step that I'd like to see. Like, I want to hear your thoughts on how you think Farabee's been. And then I want to just ask you briefly, like, when Zeri comes back after the break, you know, how does that all shuffle down? Because, you know, would you be enticed to put him on that top line with those guys on the wing? And then Farabee goes down to, say, the third line. Pospisil goes to the fourth line. Like, that, to me, is a natural slotting. I'd like your thoughts on both of those things, though.
Farabee, I think, has been a little less of a guy that's popped, but I also think that we've seen him a few times in some good positions, and so I've liked seeing that. I still think that there is some there's definitely some potential. I think there's a lot of potential there in terms of what he could be as kind of a secondary scoring winger on this team. So I haven't minded the kind of potential that it could, but I just don't think it is for either guy. I don't think it's come fully together or anywhere close to fully together, but I kind of feel like it's been a little bit closer with Frost so far. And then as for what I do when everybody's back, I think it's a fascinating one. And for the first time, and maybe you're on the same page on this as well, for the first time, Eric, it feels like maybe they have like actual options, because before it felt like it was, okay, who are we going to put with this line and how are we going to fill out that line? Like, now it feels like you have potentially 10 top nine forwards once Zeri's healthy. And because of that, that allows you to mix. Now, all of a sudden, you can. I think I would absolutely be tempted to put Coronado on the Kadri line. I'd be tempted to put Farabee on the backline line or Zeri on the backline line. And I would, at this point, I don't think there's necessarily a wrong answer in terms of the way you go about it, because the Flames are that much deeper when it comes to their nine forwards or the top nine forwards. And honestly, I think that you've got an opportunity to maybe shore up your fourth line, and you could very easily put a guy like Martin Pospisil on a fourth line now. I think you've got some really, really favorable options or more favorable options than you had before, where it kind of felt more like they were piecemealing things together and crossing their fingers that they might find something, you know?
Yeah, there's almost always been a call up in there somewhere, and you're hoping that he'll fill a certain role along the way. And, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to some people just now about the fourth line, and, you know, when was the last time that you spent time on your show the day after a game and raving about the fourth line? Like, the first month or two, and maybe it was because Lomberg was the shiny new object and everybody absolutely loves this guy and the energy he brings. But, like, you know, since the first couple months, I'm not sure I remember a game where the fourth line's come out and really done some, you know, really kind of had an imprint on the game. And I'm not trying to criticize them, but I'm saying it's a far cry from where they were the first couple months. Are you with me on that?
Yeah, for sure. It's been a real struggle for them lately, Eric. Like, it has not been good. And they're not a team. Like, this is not a group that can have a fourth line that can't play. They need to have four lines that they're comfortable playing. And right now they don't really have that, do they? And I think that's been a significant issue for them over the last little bit. And I don't even know, like, how fixable is it? Internally, I'm not sure it's a super fixable thing. But trying Pospisil there is something else they could try if they wanted to go down that road.
I like that because, you know, the one thing you can always tell him, especially if he's just on the fourth line, is like, hey, don't even worry about the puck. Like,
yeah.
you and Lomberg just go out there and create chaos. And I remember there was a preseason game this year when it was Klapka on one side and Lomberg on the other. And they're both kind of, at the time, you know, novelty items for the Flames fans. They didn't know much about either. I mean, I know everyone knew Lomberg from the previous incarnation to some degree. He didn't play much here, but everyone knew of him. And they went out and they just caused chaos. And people were like, wow, if that's the way this is going to be this year, I want to see the fourth line all the time. And it just hasn't kind of progressed. And I guess at some point you run out of that energy that kind of took everyone by surprise. But yeah, I think they need them to go out there and help turn around games at times where they just pin the opposition into their own zone for 45 seconds and kind of help turn the tide. I just haven't seen it. So I'm kind of excited about seeing, in my mind, Lomberg and Pospisil on that fourth line, just crashing and banging, stirring it up, and getting some emotion into a game that's far too often emotionless.
Get out of here, Francis. We'll see you Saturday morning.
Have a great night, my friend. We'll see you at the rink tomorrow. Looking forward to seeing how this thing ends before a nice long break.
Looking forward to it. The game, I mean. That's the only thing I'm looking forward to. Break.
Oh, yeah.
No break in my mind. Only focused on Saturday.
You've been talking for a month about the palace that you've rented in Maui and all this stuff you're going to do. Like, I can't wait to hear how that goes.
Have a good weekend. We'll see you Saturday morning. Thank you, pal.
See you later.
Eric Francis on Twitter, funny enough, at Eric Francis, joins us every Friday for the Eric Francis Hour. Eric from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, and always great conversation. Lots to break down each and every week here on Flames Talk. That will start to wrap us up this hour. Thanks to Connor Gronsdahl, our outstanding producer, and this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to calgarylockandsafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.